at the satsang last night, someone asked the question, is there any question the answer to which is not love? And immediately so many questions flooded into my mind that indeed the answer, love, would be inadequate, that it took me a moment to formulate the answer, and in that moment someone else jumped in and seconded love as the answer. And I didn't have the opportunity to revisit the question, and I think it bears revisiting because it's a very important matter. Indeed, I'm bombarded by questions every day by people which go something like, why am I unable to love? And of course, the answer to that can't be simply, well, just love. That would go back to, who was it, Nancy Reagan with her Just Say No campaign. Remember that many years ago? If you're a drug addict or you can't love or do anything, oh, just say no to those drugs. Well, what if I can't, you see? Or even the other questions that come up, so many of them, why can't I accept love? You see, because one of the reasons why that question was difficult to answer is, are you saying that love verbally is the answer, or is it the real of love that is the answer? Now, if you're talking about the real of love, okay, it's partially true. But even then, there are people who cannot accept. No matter how much love you're radiating, they will have lead shields up that will keep your love out. I'm sure you all have that experience. Or why do I feel unworthy of love? Or people will get more philosophical and they'll say, well, why would a God who is allegedly so loving have created a world so full of hatred and non-love? And why is it that in the name of this loving God, people have committed so many acts of horror, murder, wars, torture, inquisitions in the name of a God of love, right? We all know that. That's why there's so much cynicism about love. And that can't just be answered, oh, just love. So we must understand that there is not one principle, but there are two primary principles of life. Love is one of them, but the second one is wisdom. Love without wisdom is inadequate. The road to hell is paved with good intentions, as they say, right? Love without wisdom can lead to a great deal of inaccurate karma. But also it doesn't give you the skill to help someone who is trapped in a state in which they cannot love. We need wisdom for that. And that's why a school such as this is so important. If it was just a matter of love, we wouldn't require the training that we give here. And so I want to emphasize how essential that is. Now, equally, wisdom without love is absolutely futile. And we know so many philosophers who have a great deal of capacity to think, but they can't love their way out of a paper bag. And thinking alone won't get you out of the box of the ego. The two must be integrated, yes. But we must be able to answer those questions. First for ourselves, and then if we wish to be facilitators of healing, we must be able to help others. We must be able to develop a method. We must be able to have insights that help another to understand the unconscious motivations and dynamics which keep them from living in a state of love and from distorting non-love into an illusion of love so that people can do things that are really unloving and call them love. And so we mustn't be naive and think that love without wisdom is sufficient, because it's not. Those are the two primary principles, love and wisdom. But then there are two secondary principles in the world of action, right? One is the Innenwelt, to use German philosophical concepts, and then you have the Umwelt, the world around you. Is your love active and operating in the world around you? So there are many people who say, yes, I am love, love is all there is, but then you find out they can't love their own husband or wife. They can't love their parents, their children, their world, nature. They can talk love. The love can be there in a very grand philosophical sense, but then in the actual world, the love isn't really able to function and heal the other. So there are two principles. One is karma yoga. That is love in action. If we are able to act without greed, possessiveness, the desire for some ulterior agenda to be fulfilled by the ego, then that will help to unravel the ego's knots and unwillingness to love. And the second one is community. Because it's not just a matter of what do I do, but the real test is, can I help form a communion of love with other human beings? Because that's the ultimate test, isn't it? Can we live together in love? I can think I love as long as the other is far away, but when they're right there in my face, then can I still love? And can I love them when they are not in a state of love? And how can I help to change non-love into love? It is these skills and powers that are essential, that we must grow and gain in order to be able to transform our world. So love alone is not enough. But love integrated with wisdom, with skill, with insight, with determination, perseverance, willingness to have the courage to face the adversity of people unwilling to love or receive your love, then it can be done. But when love and wisdom are combined and you wish to create community, that's when the need for law comes into play. Wisdom must come into action to create a kind of governance, a kind of understanding of what is the matrix and the paradigm in which all can live together in a state of maximum freedom without impinging on the freedom of the other. This is a great riddle for people today. At any level, they have a great difficulty in solving. How do we create a community that is both loving and liberating and at the same time has order so that everyone can grow to their full potential? And it is this that can only be worked out in the laboratory of a spiritual community. And that's why we're doing this. And if we can succeed in creating a model community that's both loving and wise, then we can transmit that and help to seed other communities around the world into a new way of living. And that's why it's so essential that we succeed in doing this. And to succeed, we must dedicate ourselves to that project. We must commit ourselves, even though it's much easier to stay at home and watch TV and not create a community. But the world is changing in such a way that we will not be able to maintain our separate private lives unaffected by the other. That was a capitalist dream, you know, that enough money could buy you your privacy and your space and you never had to deal with other people and never had to love. You could buy whatever you need. You have employees. You don't need volunteers who are there on the basis of love anymore. No, no, no. We don't care if they hate you. As long as they need your money, that's all there is. And that became the organizing principle. This whole corporate governed world is based on that. And so the whole idea of loyalty, that is an essential part of love, has fallen away. The almighty dollar has replaced it. But now that almighty dollar is not so almighty anymore and the whole system is cracking, it's realized again that, oh no, we need to have the love and the loyalty and the communion of beings if we're going to be able to move forward together. Otherwise, even for money, people aren't going to be doing their jobs. You see, the airline pilots fall asleep and they miss the destination, you know. The people running the electric grid fall asleep and suddenly there's a blackout. People aren't fixing the dikes and suddenly you lose New Orleans, right? People are literally asleep at the job because they don't care anymore. They don't have love. And they don't pay attention. Attention is part of love. And therefore, they don't feel the need to learn the wisdom to be able to act in a way that will support a very intricate and complex civilization that we've created and that is now collapsing. It's the internal infrastructure that collapses first, and then the external one, the highways and the dams and the electric grids and all of those collapse. And we're seeing that happen. But it all comes back to the fact that love and wisdom are no longer integrated and no longer functioning in the world. And so we have to repair that deficit in our own lives. And to do that, we have to recognize that the source of what is unloving in ourselves is the ego. So the first step of wisdom is the realization that I must disidentify from the ego. And then we can answer that question of why is it that religions that worship a God of love can do so many horrible things? Why can Christian people come from Europe into North America and wipe out the indigenous population living very peacefully and lovingly on the land and do that in the name of Christ? Or come to South America and convert people at the sword, point of a sword, not with love and open arms. How is that possible? It's because a religion becomes a collective ego structure. And then the actual essence of what motivated that religion to come into being in the first place is covered over by this egoic shell. And then that will justify doing anything in the name of that representation of love rather than the real of what love is. And because we have come to live in a world of representations, of symbols and language, rather than in the feeling and the essence of our innermost being, we have lost touch with that. And we have deceived ourselves into thinking, oh, I can just talk the game. I don't have to really walk it. And thus religion has become irreligion. And everything that had been a model of truth and of the power of the human spirit became delegitimized. And now we live in a world of cynicism in which everyone is lost and no one even trusts the word love any longer or the word God. And so we've created a hell realm in which there is no exit at the level of the symbol because words have become empty. Nobody believes them anymore. It pasa por alto. And the only way we can solve that problem is for ourselves to go beyond words and enter into the heart and live from the heart. And then the words will no longer be empty words. When they come out of the mouth, they won't be coming from an individual ego, but they will come from the silence that is the presence of God. So the first step in getting beyond the ego, we disidentify, and then we have to enter into the emptiness. We have to enter into the state in the heart that is free of all representations. No thoughts, no images can satisfy us or can hold the treasure of our being. We must find that treasure in completely unmediated form. It must be the love in its purest form. And yes, it will appear. It will be there as light. It will be there as energy. It will be there as many different manifestations. But we must go beyond all of those. Whatever visions one is having of angels or of insights, inspirations, etc., that's not enough. We must go beyond, deeper and deeper and deeper until we get to the absolute source of it all. And then live from that source. That's where the power of truth comes from. It comes from the silence of our being that has transcended both desire and fear and has no identification with a physical organism or with this world of time and space, but recognizes all of this as a dream in the mind of God. And then coming from the place of the dreamer, we can contribute the true beauty of love that is absolutely disinterested in the results of whether one gets anything back from the other. There must be no concern of whether you will be loved or you'll be appreciated or you'll get prestige or money or anything else as a result of your offering in the world. There must be a pure sacrificial offering of the self. And in that act, the beauty, the power of the self erupts like a flame and has the power to transform the world.